Hi guys, Sam here, host of the AEW Match Guide podcast. Before we get started on today's episode, I wanted to quickly let you all know that after Double or Nothing 2022, the creation of the second edition of the definitive AEW Match Guide will begin. The first edition sought votes from a diverse group of AEW commentators around the internet wrestling community to collectively rank the greatest matches from the first 2 years of the promotion's history, and that list is what the matches this podcast reviews is based on. For the second edition of the list that will look at matches between Double or Nothing 2021 and 2022, I'm hoping to cast that net even wider, so I'm hoping to get your support. If you're interested in submitting your votes and weren't involved last year, then please reach out to me on Twitter at sir_Samuel or via email sambrownmedia@gmail.com. And when the time comes, I'll send you out a ballot to get your vote. To celebrate this, for the month of May, we'll be looking at three different matches from previous Double or Nothings, and then in the week before Double or Nothing 2022, I'll be hosting a YouTube live stream previewing the pay-per-view. Looking forward to see you all there. That's it for now though, so let's hit the music and get this show on the road. Welcome to the AEW Match Guide podcast, where we deep dive into the best matches in AEW history. Brought to you by the Social Suplex Podcast Network and your host, Sam Brown. Yes, hello and welcome to the AEW Match Guide podcast. I'm your host, Sam Brown. Thank you for joining me. Every week, alongside a special guest, I take an in-depth look at one of the best matches in AEW history, taken from the definitive AEW Match Guide, as ranked by over 30 wrestling commentators from around the internet wrestling community. If you enjoy the show today, you can subscribe and rate it on your podcast app of choice, and make sure you check out all of the other great shows on the Social Suplex Podcast Network that cover all aspects of the world of pro wrestling. My guest today is the founder of Pro Wrestling Musings, one of the leading pro wrestling stat site on the internet. It's the great Craig Williams. And we're looking at Nyla Rose versus Hikaru Shida's no disqualification AEW Women's Championship match from Double or Nothing 2020, in our series leading up to Double or Nothing. How are you going today, Craig?
I'm good, yes. Yeah, very well. How are you?
Very well. Now, for those of you who don't know Craig, I have done a previous episode with Craig. One of the incredible things that Craig does on Pro Wrestling Musings is really dig into the stats. And now we're not going to get into an in-depth of how that works. If you want to, you can go back a few episodes where we looked at Dax Harwood versus Jungle Boy. I nearly forgot it. And Craig really went in depth. But the thing that I'm looking forward to doing with you, Craig, in looking at this match is doing that, because it's something different that you bring to the table here. But I am curious, before we get into Shida versus Nyla Rose from Double or Nothing 2020, why did you pick this match?
I think it was one of the few that are left at this stage in your review.
Spoil for choice. That,
a little bit. I mean, that's maybe not perhaps totally true. So when you actually look at this card, it's a really good pay-per-view. The AEW shows during the pandemic are kind of much maligned in relative terms, like as much as AEW wrestling is maligned. But this pay-per-view has Jungle Boy versus MJF. It has Brody Lee versus Jon Moxley at his Stadium Stampede. And then it has this match. They're all really, really good matches. This is probably about the best women's match at this point of AEW. Perhaps, certainly from my memory at the time, it was quite... It was...
I think it probably was a... For me, it was a toss-up between this and the original Riho Nyla Rose match on the very first Dynamite. They were the two that I was saying, these are probably the two best women's matches. And I held that in probably that kind of level until the Lights Out match that happened at the start of 2021 between Baker and Thunder Rosa. Yeah. That's not necessarily how it played out when we did the voting last year or in even necessarily with Dave Meltzer or Cage match, but that's what I personally had.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think this match is very much forgotten, which is interesting as well, being that it's Shida winning the title for her year-long title reign. Yeah, I really liked this at the time. I thought it was really well done. It was the first time that they really started to push the boundaries with the women's division in terms of like what they were willing to do, stepping out with kind of maybe, I don't know if we want to get political, but maybe misogynistic kind of expectations of women's wrestling and all that kind of stuff. I mean, obviously it had been done before, and WWE had done stuff with in NXT with, you know, the Four Horsewomen and that, and then
even like Survivor Series 2002 had an incredible hardcore match between Trish Stratus and Victoria, where they were like going through garbage chairs, full headshots and everything. It's something that
I was
kind of got taken off thinking, off the table, as opposed to, you know, it actually got put on the table originally at any point in the 2010s. It just sort of was something they went allowed to happen again.
And then Evolution, I always sticks out in my mind. They had a really great match between Charlotte and Becky Lynch as well. So yeah, this was kind of in that vein, kind of pushing it a bit. I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed this show. Like, I think it was one of those shows that wrestling fans kind of needed. And AEW were struggling but doing okay with what they were doing week to week. And then you had this show, which ended with that kind of incredible, whatever kind of match that was.
Stadium Stampede.
In the stadium.
Well, funny you mention it, just to give the listeners a quick tease, in a few weeks' time, as sort of a season finale for the match guide, we will be breaking down the Stadium Stampede match. So that'll be a lot of fun in itself. A little bit different to what we're looking at here today. I'm really glad you brought up this match, because people who listen to this podcast, particularly if you listen to the previous ones we've done on the women's division, I'm a big fan of Hikaru Shida. And I also really like Nyla Rose. And this is the first time we've reviewed a match with either of them. And I think they are two unsung heroes of the early AEW women's division. And I'm keen to dig into this match and look at these two and hopefully shine a light on something that I think does get a little bit pushed aside. And there's various reasons for that, some good faith, some bad faith, you know, some reasonable and some, I would argue, not so reasonable. But for me, these two are a shining light. And this match, as I said, well, I'm already pretty high on it. So we can get stuck into it. Of course, as we always do on the match guide, we'll give the match its flowers. Dave Meltzer gave this match 3.75 stars. Cage Match currently has it ranked at 8.17. And when we did the match guide back in 2021, the first edition of it, it came in 50th, just scraped into the top 50. So it just made it. It's a match that is well remembered and has decent critical consensus to it, particularly looking at Cage Match, 8.17. That's a 4-star. That's a pretty good standard. But something that I don't think is, you know, held up as some sort of legacy for the company. So it's something that I'm looking forward to digging into. Of course, let's first start out by talking about the build. And to talk about the build, I want to talk about each of the characters in it first. So the champion going into the match was, of course, Nyla Rose. She was one of the first women signings for the company back even before Double or Nothing 2019. She appeared at the second press conference they ever did. And she won the championship off her early AEW rival Riho in February 2020. After previously losing to Riho in the first Dynamite match and racking up various wins to get back into the title picture, as well as having a point where she even got suspended off TV for being too violent. Before the pandemic hit,
referees through tables, was it not?
Yeah, referees, various competitors. Yeah. She actually had a really interesting, a cool program with a wrestler called Shanna, who's since left the AEW, where it was basically like Nyla Rose putting it through tables in various at various times and her just firing up back. So I really like that. That was like late 2019 mostly on Dark. Before the pandemic hit, Nyla did only get to defend the title once against Chris Statlander, and that was at Revolution before the pandemic hit, obviously. She wouldn't actually get to defend it again until this match we're looking at today at Double or Nothing. So she went a whole pay-per-view cycle without defending it. We all know the reasons as to why that was. She did have a handful of squash matches and a couple of tag matches as well in between pay-per-views, but this was her one and only title defense. Now, obviously, this title run didn't go as planned, Craig, and we know the reason why, but what were your thoughts on Nyla Rose early on in AEW and as a women's champion?
That's a really tricky question. She got a lot of stick at the beginning for terrible reasons. you know, because of who she is and what she represents. It seems to be one of those things that people can kind of get away with. If you say racist stuff on the internet, you get slaughtered. But yeah, transphobia still, it seems to not, you know, I don't know. You could probably guess my extended thoughts of that from my tone. But yeah, we'll not dig too far into that. Yeah,
I mean, just to quickly put a note on that, because I hadn't planned on talking about that, but to AEW's credit, they've completely embraced it and run with it. There's never a, I don't think it's even ever been brought up that she's a trans athlete, because I'm guessing that's her wish.
Yeah, I think by making a huge point of that, it's kind of showmanship about, you know, it's WWE kind of women's revolution TM kind of stuff.
Yeah,
if you know what I mean. Mm. Yeah. Which, yeah, absolutely, to your point, it's a great credit that they've not bothered. Not that they've not bothered, but they've kind of been graceful enough to be like, you know, everybody
this is
knows.
Just a normal thing. This is a normal thing.
Mm. Mm-hmm. This is a person, you know. Why do we have
exactly.
to?
Yeah, perfect.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm. And she's really interesting in that she has flashes of brilliance every now and again, and then she kind of disappears. And I wonder if it's the kind of almost like the Big Show fallacy, like he would get wheeled in to be like, oh no, your champion's going to lose. Look how big he is. Like, you know, look how menacing she is. And then, you know, what do you do with them? I think she's criminally miscast. I think at the beginning, heel, whatever, she's done a great job. But even during this match, there's a bit where she like power slams Shida through a roulette table. And then she just turns to the camera and kind of goes, always bet on black, with this great, great comedic timing. And a lot of people are saying it, like, look at her Twitter patter, look at how she presents the media, look at her videos, you know, off the kind of the big kind of spotlight, the big screen. She's great. She's got a tremendous sense of humor. She's a wonderful character. It's John Silver type, like, you know, personality. Being able to grab the moment, social skills, all of these things. I'm sure they're going to tap into that sooner rather than later, but I feel like, you know, we're 2 years on even from this, and this is arguably her peak in terms of her booking. So it would be nice to see her break away from Vicky Guerrero and, you know, perhaps go up against somebody like Britt Baker as a face.
I've always wondered if the reason that she is with Vicky Guerrero is so she doesn't accidentally babyface herself.
Well,
she is brilliant with like the one-liners, and you know, if you've got someone who, as we're seeing with Wardlow, like who is just a brute and just does this brutal looking violence, people get into it if they're presented the right way, and Nyla Rose definitely could do that. I think like early on it was clear that Nyla Rose, like very early on, I'm talking like Double or Nothing 2019, they almost did her a disservice by putting her against Kong, because she didn't have the aura and she didn't have the body language down, and she looked small and her aura didn't look as menacing as Kong's. And I know what they were trying to do in that match by putting her with Kong was so that you could get the comparison between the two and draw and say, oh wow, they've got a newer, younger version of this dominant wrestler that you know. But I think it came off then as being like, oh, this person is not in the same league.
They didn't really put her over Kong either.
No, but I think she improved really rapidly, particularly in the way that she carried herself. And and with a character like Nyla Rose, like Awesome Kong, like so much of it is in the mystique, it's in the aura, it's in the way that they walk to the ring, that they exude just this dominance and confidence and power and strength. And I think she improved really rapidly to the point, like, I really loved that initial rivalry she had with Riho, and particularly how she would just dominate Riho and batter Riho, and then Riho would fire up. And yeah, like, you're right that it's hard to – what do you do with a giant? Like, the problem with giants
Keith
is
Lee.
Their losses.
She should be Keith Lee.
Yeah, perfect. That's a perfect – but the problem with giants is their losses hurt them more because their losses tip away at that aura, which, as I said, is so important.
Like Lance Archer.
Yeah, someone who's smaller, like, they can absorb the loss because, like, they don't have to be completely dominant in their character. for their character to work. Whereas for a monster to work, their character does have to have that air of unbeatability. And certainly I think Nyla Rose picked that up early on. And I thought it was a great choice to switch her, to push her as champion. And one of the questions I'll ask you after this match was it the right choice to switch to Sheeta? But we'll get to that in the legacy. But I was really high on Nyla Rose at this point, and I continue to be to this point. I agree with what you've said about her potentially being miscast or misused. She has gone on to become, you know, a really good utility player. But, yeah, I think she is an underrated promo, and she can really have that overwhelming ability in the ring to just ragdoll people around and look like a dominant mm-hmm. force.
You know, so they just had Samoa Joe versus Max Caster. I quite like the idea of her being in that kind of role, the way that kind of Joe was laughing off a lot of Max Caster's jokes and kind of taking the mickey a little bit with, you know, doing his own version of kind of Max Caster's kind of body language, dance, hip hop moves. I don't know. I'm too old to be able to label that without sounding completely out of place. But yeah, he like slammed him into the corner or something and then kind of did his own little wee dance. And it's Samoa Joe. He's like supposed to be presented as a killer. Isn't that going to diminish his aura? Well, no, of course not, because he's got personality and he can back it up. He can kind of laugh at the goofy little rapper guy and then still be able to kind of demolish him. And I think that would be perfect for Nyla Rose. Like, you can have Rebel coming out talking trash on behalf of Britt Baker, and she can stand there and laugh and raise her eyebrow or whatever, and then, you know, be terrifying when they actually start fighting. So, yeah, that's I think you've got options with her.
Absolutely, absolutely. We will get into the challenger, though. Hikaru Shida, she first debuted in AEW, also at Double or Nothing 2019 in the women's tag match. She actually got the pin in a match that featured the inaugural champion, Riho, future title challenger, Emi Sakura, and Rhea Mizunami, the incomparable Aja Kong, and someone who I think became a crowd favorite just in that match, Yuka Sakazaki. I didn't realize that she got the pin in that match. So that was like a wink to the camera that this is someone who is going to be a big part, or that they want to build up in the audience's eyes. At All Out, Sheeta would lose a singles match against Riho to challenge to be the inaugural women's champion on that first Dynamite episode. And this would be followed up with sporadic appearances through the end of 2019. But the focus would really be put on her in 2020. She'd start the year by building up a winning streak that included wins against Britt Baker, a debuting Anna Jay, Abaddon, Big Swole, the one against Yuka Sakazaki, and finally winning a fatal four-way match against Britt Baker, Penelope Ford, and Chris Statlander the week before Double or Nothing to become the number one contender for the women's championship. Craig, as I said, this was someone that they were earmarking to be a part of their division, a part of their what they wanted to build up, and someone that they were going to use in a high-profile spot early on, if you're looking. What did you think of Hikaru Shida early on in AEW?
So I used to play a lot of football, and I used to end up starting for whatever football team I played for, but I often like spent a lot of time on the bench to begin with, not playing. And I used to essentially just end up in the team because I was really, really reliable. I always turned up. I didn't do anything stupid. I was decent, but I wasn't fantastic. But I always showed up and I had a good attitude. And I wondered, it's interesting that you say about Shida getting that pinfall and the wink. I kind of thought that Shida benefited. With hindsight, I kind of thought that she benefited from the pandemic because she stuck around, she worked hard, she invested in AEW by moving to the country. And it could well be that Kenny Omega had maybe just like earmarked her because he knows about Japan. He's spoken to Emi Sakura. I don't know. And maybe I'm completely wrong. And
Shida and Omega have tag teamed before as well. So he definitely knew.
Oh, really? Before AEW?
Yep.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. Well, there you go then. So, I mean, he's more famously got that role with Riho, so I'm sure he kind of pushed her to the front. So, yeah, it sounds a bit like she was earmarked. Maybe it wouldn't have happened so soon if more people had been around. But, you know, by the time this title change took place, I was really behind Shida and thought it was a great decision. What was your question, Sam? I've rambled and forgotten.
No, you've answered it perfectly, though. It was just what were your thoughts of Hikaru early on? And I think you're right. Like, she wasn't the most over. Like, I think if you wanted to pick one of the, particularly the Joshis, who immediately impressed was Yuka Sakasaki.
Yeah.
But she had, I guess, bigger time things to do in Japan, or things that she wanted to focus on in Japan. So even though she was a fixture in AEW, she wasn't a present, constantly present. And of course, Riho was. She was the inaugural champion, so a lot of focus early on. But Shida did move to America to really focus on AEW and pursue that as her main wrestling ambition and her main wrestling goal. Mm-hmm. And so I think in some ways you're right. But I would say as well, she certainly made the most of the opportunity that she was afforded by being in the right place at the right time. You can say we'll talk about her title reign afterwards, but in terms of the lead up, I thought she was the standout, I thought, in early 2020 in the women's division. In terms of her in-ring performance, I thought her offense looked the best out of all of them. And I thought she was coming across the most to the live crowds in terms of and that includes, you know, people like Britt Baker, who at the time in January 2020 was absolutely floundering. She was like bordering on being a failed project at the time. Chris Statlander had just debuted and was really fresh, and her opening, like her first few matches, did not really impress. Whereas you had Hikaru Shida, who was just getting out there and getting the job done, you know, having these really solid matches, you know, if not spectacular, but showing, I guess, laying out her case for like, this is the kind of thing that I can do. I can be relied upon. I do have the crowd on my side somewhat. And as well, cutting, like doing minimal backstage segments, but doing her best with communicating in English, which was something that Riho wasn't doing. I do think they probably could have done, they could have served Riho better by giving her a translator or something. But, you know, at least you could see that Shida was trying to work with what the landscape was. Definitely, I thought she was the shining light. Her and Nyla Rose and Riho were the shining lights early on for the women's division. And also, I really like Big Swole early on, but that's just because she had career for days. And
she was in the crowd. She was in the crowd for this one.
Yes. There's some. We'll get to it later, but there's some interesting people in the crowd. if you start looking close enough, the rivalry between these two, between Shida and Rose, it was pretty minimal. As I said, the week before Double or Nothing, Shida won the right to face Nyla Rose, and then also had they had a tag match the week after, which was when the match that was going to happen at the pay-per-view got made no disqualification. Actually, I just remembered, and I would like to talk about, the match in the pandemic that Shida had with Britt Baker. That was another standout moment early on, where I think particularly Hikaru Shida was like, I am the person. And I wouldn't be surprised if that's when they decided, like, we're going to go with you as champion as opposed to Nyla Rose.
Yeah, I mean, Hikaru Shida was just really good at wrestling, I think, was like, Riho was excellent as well, but there was a lot of very public teething issues with that division, and Hikaru Shida was able to jump off the screen with some of her, not so much character work, just the way that she emoted, but yeah, also just by being able to take Britt Baker, who was struggling, and putting together a really good match in QT Marshall's gym, I think.
Yep.
And that was the match where saying that she's a really good wrestler and she was putting really good matches together. But that's the match where it might not have been Sheena's fault, but Britt Baker, at that point, it was when she famously got kind of busted open and she had the number one selling T-shirt with her face with the blood everywhere, which is kind of been forgotten now after all the.
The other times that same thing has happened with Britt Baker.
Especially the kind of lights out match seems to have absorbed that, and it feels like it happened in that match. But the first time it was that match with Shida in the gym. That may have been the time.
Yeah, certainly one of the moments that I guess was the making of Britt Baker in terms of a big moment in the spotlight. And then that gave her the chance to start playing silly buggers with injuries in all sorts of ways, which would, you know, further be impacted by her being injured in the Fatal 4-Way match that they had to determine who was going to be number one contender. But yeah, look, I guess going into this match, as I said, I thought that Sheeta's in-ring work at the time was probably the reason they picked to go with her. Who did you think, and I was thinking that going into Double or Nothing, who did you think would win this match?
Well, it was hard to call because, as you said, Nyla Rose's reign had been so disrupted by the pandemic, so she hadn't really done much with it. So I think if I was going to say, like, put a bet on it, I would have probably suggested she'd retain. But I was very much in favour of Sheeta. Like, she'd been there the whole time. It felt like it would make sense for her to have the title. She'd essentially been carrying the division during the kind of early pandemic.
We will move on to the match itself. Of course, it was at Double or Nothing at 2020 at Daly's Place. The opening was a tribute to Hana Kimura. There was a still photo, and Excalibur mentioned Hana Kimura and some of the things that happened to her. She died in the days leading up to Double or Nothing, and she is someone who Hikaru Shida knew. She wrestled in Japan, both against and with, in terms of a tag team. They moved into a short video package, focusing a lot on like the sporting aspect of the rivalry for the championship, emphasizing Nyla Rose's dominance since AEW had started, Nyla Rose's strength, but also sort of showing the momentum that was on Sheeta's side that she'd built up with this winning streak throughout 2020. Once it cut to the entrances, Sheeta came out with like an awesome robe and some new gear. And the commentators note that she is on that undefeated streak and that she's been ranked number one for 13 straight weeks. And then Nyla comes out holding Sheeta's kendo stick that she stole from Sheeta earlier in the week. She has that in one hand and then the women's championship in the other. What did you think of like the presentation pre-match of this match?
So it's a really good video package, and it makes it seem really dramatic, and You get the thing about Nyla Rose and being suspended and really bigging her up. I thought the presentation was really good. Especially when you take into consideration the conditions that they were working under at the time.
Absolutely. I always thought Sheeta's gear is like been really fantastic. She's always on point with her gears, with her, like her color schemes and everything. Love that element of wrestling, like how the wrestlers choose to present themselves. And I always think Sheeta is on point with that. And she nearly always has new gear for big matches. And that was the case here, sort of leveling up with that. Mm-hmm. And I, as I said, like, I really like the way Nyla Rose presents herself at this point. I think she has that air of danger about her. And I love how she's got the multicolored braids in her hair, sort of reminiscent of Awesome Kong, and just a wink and a nod to like, this is the legacy that I'm following in. And they both looked very serious. The commentators even noted that like normally Sheeta is quite happy and quite friendly, but she's looking very serious for this match. So emphasizing the stakes of it and I guess giving it that air of a big time match, even if they didn't have like the grand build that, you know, maybe some championship matches have had.
Yeah. And they kind of proved that they didn't quite need it. Like, the video package did enough. The attitude of the two women coming out was kind of set the stage as well. Both were, as you said, both were serious. Both were ready to do battle. They weren't taking it lightly. They weren't messing about. It wasn't, you know, there was no hint of sportsmanship in there at all.
When the match starts and the bell rings, Sheeta rushes into Nyla, hits a drop kick, and then kicks the kendo stick out of Nyla's hands. But Nyla is actually the first person to use it after she blocks a shot by Sheeta, steals it back, and then hits Shio hard with a trio of hard shots, and then throws the kendo stick out of the ring. What did you think of the usage of the weapon straight away?
I thought that was good. It kind of brings danger in straight away. Some, like, you often hear about, especially kind of older timers talking about how like you need to build a match. I think it's good to have different templates, and I think it's really good every now and again to just start really, really hot and then you know, cool it off and build it back up. So I think that's what this did. It was it this match wasn't a back and forth affair. It wasn't filled with like them reversing each other's moves. It wasn't a technical masterpiece. The kind of strategy here was, we are going to fill this match with moments and big kind of oh my gosh type things. Mm. And they the fact that they went in that hard straight away was one of them. Mm. That's a good way to do it.
I guess there's two ways that like you can take down a monster, right? Like mm-hmm. you can be really technical, like a Bryan Danielson or a Zack Sabre Jr., and like sit back and chip away or pick a weak mm-hmm. spot and target that. But the other way, I guess, is to beat them to the punch. And that's what Sheeta goes for here. And I like also that this sets up the kendo stick as key in the match because it mm-hmm. will be something that is continually gone back to and referenced. And it was referenced in the build as well. And Sheeta does have – it's not your everyday looking kendo stick. I don't know if it's mm-hmm. made out of bamboo or something. I don't know. It looks different. It looks like it's a bit harder than your everyday kendo stick. And so I like how it immediately, I guess, spotlights the kendo stick and says, watch this. And even though you said it's not back and forth, it's quite even this match, I would say, in terms of like there's not lots of reversals, but the offense is even. Mm-hmm. And the commentary is emphasizing Sheeta's striking, particularly her knees and her kicks. She uses a number of them early to get Nyla Rose out of the ring, whereas Rose is more just using her power. She's like tossing Sheeta around into the barricades, onto the poker table on the outside, bringing in your stats that you've assembled mm-hmm. here. What does it say to you about the action, particularly early on in this match?
So early on in the match, it's all about Nyla Rose. So I'm sure we'll link this into the description. We have a flow of offense, which kind of charts which wrestler is kind of like in control at various parts of the match. So if you're looking at it now, it's fairly straightforward. Sheeta is the red line and Nyla's the blue line. And, you know, right there at the beginning, there's huge spikes from the blue line. And it tapers off by about 5 minutes in, where there's a bit of an exchange and then Sheeta has appeared in control. So yeah, it's all about Nyla Rose to begin with. She's using the weapon a lot. She's knocking Sheeta down a lot and sprinkling in some kind of really big power-based moves as well. In terms of the match structure, the beginning of this match is all about showing off the mountain that Sheeta has to climb.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, and as I said, gets the sort of early biggest impact move is she gets put through a poker table that's around the outside. Yes. Nice little nod to the Double or Nothing, the casino sort of element. Last year it was at Las Vegas, Double or Nothing, of course, casino term. Mm-hmm. But as we noted, there's some extras around the side. And if you have your eagle eyes out and if you rewatch this match, look for a man in a grey polo shirt. Bit of long-term storytelling there. I had to make sure this was right. But is that Dan Lambert?
You mentioned this before. I didn't see him. I don't know if it was Dan Lambert. What I did find amusing was how Big Swole choreographs it. So it looks like she's going to try and run up and attack Nyla Rose and somebody pulls her back. But no, I didn't see Dan Lambert, if that was him.
I swear it's Dan Lambert just standing nearby. Because where you're talking about, Big Swole is kind of getting held back a little bit, mm-hmm. but just standing off to the other side next to the poker table Sheeta's been put through is a guy in a grey polo shirt that looks, if it's not Dan Lambert, Matt, it's an absolute ringer. So, you know, long-term storytelling with AEW. He's been watching this promotion since the early days. I wonder what he thought of this match. I'd be keen to get his thoughts one day, hopefully. Or maybe not, depending what your thoughts are on there. Nyla, as we said, like she's the dominant force early, like tosses Sheeta back into the ring and just delivers more and more punishment. But Sheeta does manage to get the odd counter in, particularly when Nyla goes for big moves. So she mm-hmm. gets out of an attempted powerbomb and lays in a few strikes before Nyla's able to overwhelm her again and uses the environment well as well. So when Nyla Rose mm-hmm. goes to like toss her into some stuff, she jumps off the ring steps and comes off with a crossbody and then is you know, like kicking around chairs and things like that, then suplexes mm-hmm. Nyla Rose onto a stack of chips. And then after Nyla Rose has sort of rolled off of them, she goes back and then runs and hits a knee off the stack of them. I like that element of her offense.
Yeah, it was taking her kind of established offense and adjusting it to the environment. Like that's clearly a reference to her, the chair propelled kick thing she does, where she puts down the chair and then runs and does the knee off of it, done with the poker chips, which was cool and pretty effective.
Yeah, and I think that's the best looking knee I've seen her landing those off the chair or off the poker chips in this case. Sometimes I think Sheeta sometimes does hold back because she doesn't want to completely blast her opponent. You know, like it's not Kenny Omega levels of hitting a knee. And I think the one that suffers the most is the one off the chair. But in this one, she seems to have the confidence to really lay it in. Yeah. I'm not sure if it's because she's with someone who's a bit bigger and she knows she isn't going to like completely overwhelm them with what she's delivering. But this was one of the best ones I've ever seen her do.
Nyla Rose is willing to take those bumps as well. Like the Riho match, the first match, she does that senton onto all those chairs.
Yeah.
The first Dynamite.
Yeah. And man, I'm just trying to think back to, as we were talking about, she had those, I guess she also is an expert at delivering in the environment, having, you know, previously had all those tables matches, and later on she does get out of table in this one as well. They bring the focus back to the kendo stick. Sheeta, after delivering that offense on the outside, Sheeta gets the kendo stick back and delivers some more shots to Nyla Rose back in the ring, but isn't able to get a pin even after like a brain buster onto the kendo stick. And then Nyla takes back over, as we said, once again, that overwhelming power, but isn't able to land a decisive blow. She even hits the diving knee onto Sheeta. So when Sheeta's hanging over the ropes, the diving knee, which has ended matches for her. Yeah. Yeah. It looked great in this match. It didn't look like Sheeta was just holding herself there, which those sort of spots, I'm always iffy with those, because too often it can look like there's just someone sitting there waiting to be hit. But it didn't look like that in this. As we said, this is a very even match. And looking at the stats you've put up here, looking at strikes, strike downs, grapples, it's quite even.
Yeah, very even. Sheeta tends to get a little bit more of each. So 47 strikes from Sheeta in this match in 16 minutes is pretty good. Nyla Rose with 31. Nyla Rose uses more grapples, more power moves, 9 compared to 4. So that's more than double. That makes sense for the character. Sheeta with more strike downs, putting over her kind of, you know, the use of her knees and her kind of Japanese Joshi. You know, those matches are far more strike down based, Stardom and Tokyo Joshi Pro. So yeah, that makes complete sense as well. If you do the percentages, 54% of the match offense in this was Sheeta, 46 was Nyla, which is a reoccurring theme with Nyla Rose. She plays the big monster, but she almost always gets in less offense than her opponent, which is interesting. I believe it's the kind of psychology behind that is that the opponent needs to overwhelm her. So you kind of see them laying in a lot of strikes, and then Nyla will, like, they might use like 6 or 7 strikes, and then Nyla just turns around and, you know, power bombs them or whatever. So that's the quick stats.
Yeah, or even the strike down rate, 21% to 19%. Like neither of them are able to land like completely decisive blows. Obviously, Sheeta, as you said, lands a couple of extra ones, but that's just because of the sheer volume she's throwing. That she manages to get a few down. Things start to escalate sort of towards the 2/3 mark of the match, which I guess is a sign of a well-paced match. Nyla gets a table set up in the corner.
This country was built on a distinctly American work ethic, but today work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries, and with that, we sent away good jobs and diminished our capability to make things. American Giant is a clothing company that's pushing back against this tide. They make a variety of high-quality clothing and activewear, like sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more. All made right here in the USA, from growing the cotton and adding the final touches. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs for seamsters, cutters, and factory workers in towns and cities across the United States. And it's about more than an income. Jobs bring pride. Purpose. They stitch people together. If all that sounds good to you, visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20.
So some back and forth in it, manages to powerbomb Sheeta through it, but still only gets a 2 count. So really emphasizing Sheeta's fire. Nyla's like really frustrated at this point and goes up to the top rope to deliver another one of those falling knees. But Sheeta like just grabs the kendo stick and hurls it at Nyla Rose before running up and hitting an avalanche Falcon Arrow. Like, we've been mentioning the strikes, but Hikaru Shida is like is sneaky strong. That many women would be able to do that to someone like Nyla Rose.
Yeah, and it's not even like just a superplex where it's one motion. You have to there has to be a lot of control there. You have to turn and make sure the person lands in the correct kind of way as well. That's that's not just, it's like a lot of these moves is the two wrestlers finding the right momentum, whereas, and there will be a bit of that, but Shida still needs to then do the rest. So yeah, it's impressive.
Yep. And of course, it's a Falcon Arrow. It only gets a two.
Yes.
No one wins with the Falcon Arrow. No one actually does the deal where they hit the Falcon Arrow. And the kick out from that gets us into the final stretch of the match. Shida goes for her running knee strike, but Nyla like hits Sheeta's leg with the kendo stick. Sheeta's sort of limping, but it does only fire up Sheeta more. She delivers like a big elbow strike, really cracks Nyla Rose with it, then hits another running knee strike for a close two. And as the pair rise up, Sheeta grabs that kendo stick that has been the focus since the start and absolutely twats Nyla Rose with it, breaking the weapon over like shoulder head, I think. I don't know if it slipped up. Looks like it cracked her in the shoulder from the camera. It may have hit her in the head. Before hitting the final running knee for the win. What did you think of the ending sequence?
The bump that Nyla Rose takes for that kendo stick is like, it's class. It's almost slapstick, but it's not. Like she takes the bump and it's as if her whole body goes limp and she just kind of topples like a tower. And it's an incredible bump.
It's like, I mean, because the idea is that she got twatted across the head. It's like she kind of goes unconscious for a second, like her body just seizes up and she's down. And that allows Sheeta to get that win. I love Sheeta's fire in this. But also the mixture of that and the resourcefulness, like her just, as we said before, like just hurling the kendo stick at Nyla Rose when she's up on the turnbuckle. And then when they're back down on the ground, Nyla Rose, because she can't get up because she's been taken down by the Falcon Arrow, she just whacks Sheeta in the knee with the kendo stick as a way to sort of block the running knee when it's coming in.
It's all struggle at that point.
Yeah. And even though like Sheeta's not limping or anything, she immediately grabs her knee but fires up. So it's like the she feels the pain, the adrenaline hits. She's like, okay, I'm going to end this quick. Two massive strikes with her elbow, her knee, and then the kendo stick and another knee for the win. It all ends in a flurry.
Yeah. And Nyla's very protected there as well. Like she kicks out of the first knee and then you need that kind of brutal looking kendo stick shot to then hit another finisher to win.
You know what it's actually very similar to, and you didn't do this as a comparison later, but it's very similar, and I've just thought of this in us recounting the ending, to how the match between Mox and Brody Lee finishes.
Oh, yeah.
Mox can't get the win with the big, like they have the big offense, they have the big weapon spot where he gets put through the ramp, that can't put him down. The normal paradigm shift can't get him down, and it's just like a desperate struggle at that point where it's like, how do I get out of this alive? I've just got to go all out with everything. So it's interesting how these two matches parallel one another, given that they're at the same pay-per-view. They're for the women's and men's championship. In the post-match, Sheeta is very emotional, kind of crying after she's won it. The commentators put over how tough it must have been to wrestle after the news of Hana Kimura, and it can't be forgotten, like this is at the point in the pandemic where like there's no way she is getting back over to Japan. I don't really know how close they were, but she has wrestled with her and obviously like that's if suicide happens, even if it's just someone you know remotely well, it's something that really hits you and that combined with the isolation of being overseas in a foreign country, a place that doesn't speak your native language during such an isolating period, I can imagine that, like, there is a real sense of emotional catharsis for Sheeta at the point of winning this championship, because she has sacrificed a lot to be part of this promotion and to be in the position that she's in, and she's achieved it. It's very emotional stuff.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. She's, you know, she's really invested, and she's taken a risk as well. Like, there's no guarantee that she's going to win that championship. There's also history of American wrestling companies just not doing a good job with really talented Japanese performers. Like, you know, look at the other company, Nakamura, Asuka. Like, people will argue that they're in some way successful, but I don't know. I think mishandled is fair. Yeah.
And AEW's hit rate isn't exactly sparkling at this point either.
No, like, it's not great.
For all of the good they did with Riho, like, the way that the match with Emi Sakura was handled was really poor.
Not good.
And, you know, the way that the Joshi sort of popped in and out, it was not ideal.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. And I mean, Riho was the first champion, and she had really good moments, but there was a lot of criticism of how she was effectively mute a lot of the time.
There is a great shot in the ending bit. I just wanted to point out of Sheeta picking up the broken kendo stick, and it's like just bent at the end at like a 45 degree angle from that final shot, which just really just puts an exclamation mark on the ending of the match and what she's done to have to get over Nyla Rose. There were some really screwy bits with the camera. I don't know if they're using their normal crew or what's going on with this. But there's some bits where they miss bits, and there's a weird bit where it's like the cameraman falls over or something, and you just get shots of the ground for, it's like I'm doing a home movie or something for 2 seconds.
There's a bit where something happens. I think Nyla hits a big spot on Sheeta, and then there's just like people's t-shirts and stuff. Is the camera shot?
Yeah, it's weird. Yeah. But they got a really good shot, a couple of really good shots at the ending here. We've sort of talked about the direct comparison in terms of the stats.
Yeah.
Craig, I'd love to move on to, and as we said, like, if you are listening, there'll be a link in the description for these stats, and also on my Twitter, Sir_Samuel, I'll have a link below where I tweet about this match. It'll be a pinned tweet with a link to these stats. I'd love to move into the comparisons to different matches as we talk about sort of the overall of this match.
Yeah, absolutely. So in terms of the, like, when you're contrasting it to the different matches.
Yeah, you picked a few matches to put it against. So you've compared it to a number of different women's matches, in Rosa versus Baker, the Lights Out match, Riho versus Deeb. So that was another one we featured in the match guide a number of episodes ago, and it was also in the match guide, I think it came in 20-something, and then Sheeta versus Baker as well from Double or Nothing 2021, which was a little bit of a similar length match, but also very different in terms of the numbers that ended up being put out.
Yeah, so the Sheeta versus Baker match was kind of like famously a letdown. They've been building up Baker for all this time to eventually, you know, become the champion, and people were really looking forward to it. Sheeta had essentially been dwarfed by Baker's star power, and the match itself didn't really go particularly well, and that was a little bit worrying because Sheeta, although there was a lot of criticisms of her reign in terms of her star power and her maybe not kind of being able to present herself fully on American television, or maybe more accurately, the company maybe not quite figuring out that particular challenge, the match versus Baker didn't work. So was that Baker? Was that Sheeta? I don't know. I would personally be a little bit more worried about, you know, going forward with Baker as champion. And, you know, I would still suggest that it's not really worked out. So, yeah, but in terms of that match, it's very different to this match. It's kind of face versus heel. It's more kind of a struggle. Like, the reversal rates in that match, 70 reversals an hour and 50 reversals an hour from each of them, compared to the kind of 40 and 30 in this match. So that's when I said before, this is more of a big spots match. Whereas if you think back to the Sheeta versus Baker, there's a lot of reversals, a lot more kind of struggle, kind of, it's more sporting, it's more kind of two competitors kind of trying to get the best of each other. Whereas this Shida versus Nyla Rose match, it's still that, but it's more built around the big spots, if that makes sense. And the Riho Deeb match is similar. It's more based on, it's more of a sporting struggle. Whereas again, this match is more, it's more spotty without losing. It's not a spot fest. It still feels sporting, but it's not as much of a wrestling match as the others that I just mentioned.
An interesting comparison I'd make between Shida and Nyla and Riho and Deeb, which were, I think they're an interesting comparison because you've got like sort of that Joshi influence against that American influence. But the strike rates in that both Shida and Riho are outputting giant levels of strikes. Riho, 207 strikes per hour, and Shida's at 170 against someone who's in the low hundreds, or even Serena Deeb's case, in the below 100. She's only at 97. Almost is, and obviously she's, instead of using overwhelming power, she's using technical skill with submissions and reversals. But that's an interesting comparison in, like, both of them are sort of these strike heavy wrestlers trying to chip out and chip away at someone who has a big advantage in another area, which is interesting. This is something that really surprised me. Shida versus Nyla against Rosa versus Baker. Now, what is Rosa versus Baker most remembered for? It's remembered for being this insane bloodbath. But if you look at the weapons attacks, this one, like Shida versus Nyla Rose, this no disqualification match, actually out per hour strike on weapon attack strike, whatever you'd call it, the rate of weapon attacks is higher in this by a pretty not insignificant margin to what Rosa and Baker are doing. For those of you who are just listening, Shida has 36 weapon attacks per hour, Nyla Rose 58. The Rosa versus Baker, Rosa has 40 and Britt Baker has 25. That of course matches with like what happened with Rosa beating Britt Baker and completely bloodying Britt Baker up by using more weapons attacks. But when you think of like what are the most violent matches that women have had in AEW, I did not think Shida versus Nyla Rose would be so significantly higher.
Yeah. So there's a lot. I suppose it's the way they present the violence. This match, it's presented via kind of just pure athleticism and taking the moves. So you've got Nyla Rose lifting up Shida and dumping her through that table. You've got Shida doing that cool spot where she runs and jumps and hits the knee, and then the kendo stick spot. Whereas Rosa and Baker, although I'm not diminishing what they're doing, but the way that the violence in that match was presented was more grisly. I would say this match is hard hitting violence, where that's kind of more grisly, whereas they're using tacks and they're using blood and all those kind of things to get it across. Two ways of doing it, very different ways of doing it, I suppose.
Yeah, that is not something I expected to see today. So I'm really interested in that. Looking at, I guess, in comparison to some matches that have happened outside of AEW, outside of AEW. So you've pulled up a Tokyo Joshi Pro match and two Stardom matches. I'm curious what your thoughts are around this and why you chose these other matches to compare it to.
So I suppose I was just trying to step outside AEW. It's a little bit of a stretch because these are all just straight matches. The reason that I chose them is because they are recent and because they are kind of the pinnacle of women's wrestling. Like, people talk about, the NXT had the best women's, roster of all time a couple of years ago. Maybe you can make that argument in America, but like you just can't in terms of women's wrestling in general. That's just not quite true. Siri and Julia are kind of the better wrestlers at the moment in world wrestling. As Azumi and Starlight Kid had a wonderful match this year that was heavily kind of critically acclaimed. And Miyu Yamashita, I've pronounced that wrong, but and Nakajima in Tokyo Joshi Pro also had a great match that was kind of put on earlier this year. And what you do see from looking at these matches is they have a wider spread of the offense. But the thing that jumps out for me that I think is relevant to Hikaru Shida is the use of strike downs. So they're all using a lot of strike downs. The big difference, however, is the way that submission holds are playing into those matches.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Across those matches, it looks like submissions, reversals, and even pin attempts are much higher. So I guess your rate of
it's
offense
more wrestling.
There's more, as you said, those are like more critically acclaimed than this. Perhaps that spread is one of the reasons as to why that is. These guys are like putting on a more well-rounded match, one is delving into more specialist territory with Shida and Nyla Rose.
Absolutely.
In terms of they've got one big strength or one or two big strengths, whereas these other guys are a little bit more well-rounded.
If I wanted to like really try to. So I might watch the Charlotte Becky match if I'm looking to try and get a better perspective and collect stats on that. But, you know, there's only so many hours in the day.
Yes, that is okay. That is absolutely okay. So we will move on to sort of talking about the more broader legacy of this match. As I said, as we've talked about, the Shida, the reign that Hikaru Shida had is something that has been controversial. Or maybe not controversial, but not universally well received. I don't think the AEW women's division has ever really been universally well received across the board. But I'm curious what you think in general of her reign, of Hikaru Shida's reign as AEW women's champion.
I think it's significantly better than people remember. There's some really good stuff in there. She has some great matches with Thunder Rosa when Thunder Rosa was the NWA champion. And there's a couple of really good matches there. She does stuff with Anna Jay. There's a match with Abaddon that was fine for what it was. The build to it was pretty awful because they had Hikaru running scared. But I think she did a lot of good stuff. She was consistent. She put on good matches all the time. I think it was just the wider issues that were kind of holding her back. It's really interesting to think what her role is going forward and whether or not she'll crop up again as champion, because the division is kind of moving. She feels a little bit like Kenny Omega in that a lot of things were built around her to begin with, but there are all these new people coming in. And if you were to sit down and write down, right, who are going to be the next five world champions, I don't know if many people would put down Hikaru Shida's name, but I wonder if that would be a mistake.
Yeah, I mean, people who've listened to all of the podcasts that I do will know very much that I'm very strong in my view that Hikaru Shida is someone that I think AEW fandom has done really wrong, not just in terms of how she's remembered, but in terms of how her reign was treated at the time.
Yeah.
I shudder to think what the AEW women's division in 2020 would have been like without Hikaru Shida. Like, this was a rickety old vehicle that was running along. There was parts like falling off at left, right, and center, and she was the one that was holding things together. Like, without her, I think this whole I'd have no idea what could have possibly happened.
Yeah.
It would not have been pretty at all. If Nyla you look Rose, at like the things maybe. That she I think Nyla Rose, and I'd like to get to the thought of Nyla Rose, because I think, as we've said, like Nyla Rose is someone who could potentially has also not been done super well by AEW. But in terms of what Hikaru Shida was able to do, you look at the people that she has made across this reign and the things that she's done. In the lead up, of course, we mentioned the Britt Baker match. She got a performance out of a wrestler in Anna Jay who hadn't even had 10 matches that demanded that Anna Jay be signed. That is that's incredible that she was able to get such a strong performance out of someone who is barely out of wrestling school. And then you look at, as you mentioned, Thunder Rosa matches, the Serena Deeb matches that she had And then also she made a, she had that program with Abaddon. She also had another match in the lead up against Abaddon. She had a match with Tay Conti that people really remember and put Tay Conti over and as a and up as a potential challenger for the championship in a really serious way that Tay Conti had never been presented in before. And she also presented and she pitched and helped put on the women's contender tournament that happened across Japan and America. For me, was something that that felt really unique at the time and
that was
like
great.
A breath of
that
air really in the division. And she, I think she was doing incredible things at a time when the women's division was just getting very little creative heft from the company itself. It felt there were weeks where there would be no women's matches on TV. It felt like things were always coming together at the last minute in terms of the pay-per-view defenses and things like that. And the fans as well, I felt like almost from the minute that Sheeta got the belt, people were waiting for Britt Baker to take it off her instead of enjoying the great matches that she was able to do. The one I didn't mention was Penelope Ford as well. She had a fantastic match against Penelope Ford. Who else has been able to do that or have a match as good against Penelope Ford as her? As a working champion, Hikaru Shida was fantastic. I would argue that her reign has been vastly superior to Britt Baker. There's different elements that Britt Baker brought in to being champion, but for all the hype that she got and the amount that the fandom wanted her to be the champion, I think she massively underdelivered, even in the areas that she was previously strong, like the character elements. So I don't think she delivered really strong stories at all, and she definitely didn't deliver strong matches, whereas Hikaru Shida, like the stories weren't great, but the matches at least, when she was in the ring, the matches were at least good, if not great.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think she's easily the best women's champion they've had. And yeah, I think there's been big issues with the division under Britt Baker. And hopefully they're going to get a bit of a fusion of the two now with Thunder Rosa, somebody who is a little bit stronger than Hikaru Shida with her character, at least on kind of English based wrestling programs. But, you know, Thunder Rosa is great in the ring. She is a stronger in ring worker than Britt Baker. So yeah, it'll be interesting moving forward. I think a potential title match between Shida and Thunder Rosa could be great if they're willing to go down that route and just do a face versus face wrestling match. I wouldn't like to see them worrying about alignments with that. But no, yeah, absolutely. I completely agree. I thought her reign was great. I was always interested in the matches. They did struggle with the other stuff, the stories and the language barrier quotation marks.
Yeah.
I think they could have been a bit more creative and found ways around that. But I'm completely on board with you. I think she was a really great champion and did her job. And I think any failings are more to do with how the company treats the women's division and how the company treated her being, you know, English as a second language. And they could have done more, but it was still a good reign.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't have anything more to add on that. I do think it's worth talking about Nyla Rose though, because as we both said, I think she is someone, she is 39, so her days are not long. Yes, and that's something that surprised me. I looked it up before this podcast. I thought she was younger than that. I would have picked early 30s.
Yeah, I guessed, yeah.
But she's 39, so not a whole lot left. Who knows? But not, you know, she doesn't have 10, 15 years ahead of her, most likely. Mm-hmm. Where do you see her going forward? Like, how do you think they could potentially improve on someone who, as we've said, is gets it done in the ring and could potentially be like a really good promo as well if given the chance, even when she's given the chance.
I think it's maybe quite hard for her to regain that championship. I think she is because of who she is and her style, she is too useful in other roles. I could see her being a TBS champion, perhaps a face TBS champion. and eventually putting somebody over. But yeah, there needs to be a really prominent face run from her at some point where she's getting to delve into her more real life kind of side of her and kind of showing her personality and her comedic range and all of that, because that is pretty untapped, you know, in AEW on screen. Yeah, but I'm not sure if she'll ever kind of hold the top belt again.
And there is like a really triumphant story to tell. We mentioned that like AEW didn't indulge in the backslapping, but there is something to be like, there is something to be said for Nyla Rose the person, and being like, look, this person has overcome some significant challenges to get where she is today, and is someone who, as we've said, is even after it all, is immensely charismatic, fantastic to watch, is engaged. And is also, I think very, from all reports I've heard, like very warm towards people who like her fans, and someone that people really like to get around and get and chat to and meet up with on those fan days and things like that. So I definitely think it would be good if they did something with her. I wonder if they've put Vicky Guerrero with her so she doesn't accidentally babyface herself with some of the work that, like, some of the stuff that she comes up with on the mic, because she's got the ability to trash talk without it coming across in a gross way, which not everyone, as we're seeing with like Tay Conti and Sam Guevara, not everyone has the ability to do that, like, and to carry it off in a way that people, you know, like Eddie Kingston can call someone that I can't, and get away with it and still leave the crowd loving him, just because of the way he carries himself and who he is.
Are you suggesting that like Sammy and Tay's banter, you know, calling top team the plot team, wasn't particularly funny, good, original or clever?
Hey, well, look, Eddie Kingston got a D's nuts joke over. Enough to like make a shirt out of it. You know, like if you deliver something well, you could deliver any. Like I think there's some people that can almost deliver anything. You know, like there was that joke on BTE at one point where they were like handing him a cookie or a pumpkin or something, getting him to kind of promo about it. You know, like I'm not saying Nyla Rose is Eddie Kingston level, but I'm saying that like she is someone that can be used in a really cool way. I mean, wouldn't she make a really interesting person for Dan Lamb? Oh, actually, second thoughts, just don't even go there with that, because who knows what's out of his mouth. But like, I don't know. I'm just spitballing ideas of thoughts of like people, heels that she could feud with that would be really interesting.
She'd be a good person to put Dan Lambert through a table, if you want to revisit that storyline.
Wouldn't people? Yeah, wouldn't that be great?
I think there's loads you could do. I think babyface Nyla Rose really works on a bunch of levels, like being huge and able to be really threatening, but then having a sense of humor, I think, is a wonderful character. And I think that they're clearly interested in that character with what they're doing with Keith Lee and Samoa Joe. We've had monster heel Nyla Rose in the women's division for a long time now. Like maybe it's time to move on and give her something else to do.
Yeah.
She'd be a wonderful ambassador for the company in that role. Like
exactly.
You can kind of do that kind of her backstory type stuff as you were saying, but just like without having to be explicit in ramming it down people's throats, which I think is the difference. Like she's been there for years now, so if she starts kind of talking about how people are treated and how to be different and stuff without having to and I think it would be I think there's some benefit to her being a little bit more explicit with her kind of her actual story, because it is a community that is struggling so much and is being treated really poorly by governments. But so like there could be a huge amount of value for that. And if she, but she, that that's up to her, because the way that people will receive that will be 99% positive, but that small minority of people that cannot deal with that kind of difference will be pretty awful. So that can only that has to be for her to decide.
But it is a company that isn't afraid to, I guess, wear politics on its sleeve a bit. I think of like Adam Page coming out in the main event in Florida with rainbow tassels and a rainbow thing on,
and they
when
booed
there's
him.
These horrendous
well.
Laws going through. Sorry?
They booed him as well. Like that crowd was booing him during that match.
Mm. Last thing I wanted to get into with this before we head out is just thinking about where this ranks amongst the all-time women's matches. Just looking at, we will be doing a new roundup of the best matches. So from Double or Nothing 2021 to 2022, once that takes place. But in terms of the original list on the Definitive Match Guide, the matches that this was behind was Riho versus Nyla Rose from the very first Dynamite. That came in 47th. As I said, this one came in 50th. It was behind Karushita versus Tay Conti, which came in 41st. And then the next one up was Riho versus Serena D, which came in 22nd. And then the Lights Out match came in 3rd. Okay. Is that the order you would be placing the women's matches in?
I can't remember the Tay Conti Hikaru Shida match in any kind of great detail. So I'm surprised about that one. I don't remember a huge amount of matches from the women's division for Double or Nothing. Does the women's tournament come into that, the Japanese one?
Yeah, so there was two matches that got votes for that they both ended up outside of the top 50. So the two that got votes was Mizunami versus Maki Ito and Veni versus Emi Sakura.
I feel like there was a really excellent Serena Deeb versus Riho match as part of that tournament on the American side.
There was, yes. Yeah, so the Riho versus Serena Deeb match that got votes was the one that was in the pre-show for Double or Nothing 2021, but they did have a really excellent match beforehand that I think just probably got overshadowed by what they did at Double or Nothing.
I would say that match is probably superior to this match as well. But yeah, it'll have been forgotten about because of their other match.
Yeah, I don't know, personally, I know that, like, for instance, I'm pretty sure that Hikaru Shida versus Serena Deeb will be in the next one. There'll be more women's matches represented that I think would have overtaken the ones, most of the ones that were in this countdown. But certainly, I'm not sure how the Hikaru Shida versus Tay Conti got higher than this one or the Riho versus Nyla Rose one. that one baffles me to this day. But
I can't remember that match at all.
Yeah, neither. And and at the time, it wasn't particularly memorable to me either. It certainly made a star of Tay Conti, but I don't think they did anything that was, you know, really overwhelmingly dramatic in that point. I think it would probably, for me, would be third behind the Riho versus Serena Deeb match, the one from Double or Nothing, which I really liked. I think for a while this was the best women's match that AEW had ever done. And I also really did like the Nyla Rose versus Riho match from the very first Dynamite. Mm-hmm. I thought that was really masterful in how it worked the crowd, a crowd that really didn't care what was happening. It really worked them into it and got them to a crescendo at the end, which was, and even for myself, I didn't particularly have much interest in it, but it sort of got me into, really got me into it. So that was something as well. And I'd also give a shout out to
Riho's reign was good though. Like there were, it was such a long time ago. I can't really remember, but I can always whenever she was wrestling, she was always good. The Emi Sakura match that kind of is kind of badly remembered now, the actual match itself was really good. It was just it just happened. I think so. Mm. I think it was really good. I feel like I can remember it being decent, but it was just everything else around it, the kind of politics of the women's division and et cetera, et cetera.
Yep. Yeah. Well, look, hopefully we are onward to better and brighter days in the women's division. I certainly think 2022's been a really good start. The TBS Championship in particular, that tournament was really important, and I think they've made some moves to really spotlight some of the women that that have been very positive. So I think 2022 is looking to be a strong year for the women's division. I really hope, and I think she will be. I think Hikaru Shida will be a big part of that. Whether she's champion again or not, I'll be cheering for, because I'm just what she did in 2020 made me a big fan of hers. And I kind of want her to get another bite at the cherry with crowds, because I think it would be fantastic. But, you know, even if it doesn't happen, I think she will be a fantastic addition, a fantastic person to have in the roster. And say with Nyla Rose, they're both great utility players, if nothing else. But both could be used for plenty more as well. And this match just shows you why. Terrific, but potentially slightly forgotten match. Worth going back to. If you're looking to psych yourself up for Double or Nothing and look at some of the great hits of Double or Nothing's past, give this one a watch, because it will definitely be worth your time. Craig, before we get out of here, is there anything else you'd like to say about this match?
I don't know. Yeah, we've covered such a lot of it. It is worth a watch. It's an easy watch. It's really good seeing Hikaru Shida. She's very different. And if you are kind of doing anything where you're looking at the AEW's women's division, as Sam said, this is a huge kind of touch point, cornerstone of that. So, yeah, it's a really easy watch as well, which is good.
Excellent. Well, Craig, if people have heard something from you and they'd like to follow up, where can they find you?
So we have a website called ProWrestlingMusings.com where you can find loads of these kind of statistics. We've got some stuff on most social media as well if you look for that.
Excellent. And I think you've got a Twitter as well, Craig. You can search him, Craig Williams, and you'll find him there. And you can find me, Sir_Samuel. And if you have enjoyed the show today, you can rate or review it on your podcast app of choice. And if you would like to also, if you feel inclined, you can support us financially as well. If you go to redcircle.com and search for Social Suplex or AEW Match Guide Podcast, you can make a once-off or continuing contribution. And that just goes towards paying the bills, things like hosting, equipment, those sorts of things. Other than that, though, if you have enjoyed it, please tweet about it. Let a friend know. Tell them about the good news of the AEW Match Guide Podcast. And in the run-up to Double or Nothing, we are continuing to look at some of the biggest matches that have happened in Double or Nothing, and that it will also lead up to the next version of the definitive AEW Match Guide list. So keep a lookout on Twitter for all of those good things. And you'll be able to find us here again next Friday. Looking forward to seeing you then. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the AEW Match Guide podcast. If you enjoyed the show, then you can subscribe on the podcast app of your choice so you never miss an episode. Also, feel free to let me know on Twitter at Sir_Samuel. I'd love to hear from you. The AEW Match Guide podcast is brought to you by the Social Suplex Podcast Network, where you can find many other fantastic podcasts discussing not just AEW, but all parts of the world of professional wrestling. Looking forward to seeing you again next week. I'm Sam Brown.